Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I'm telling you, they're just inches away from blowing it. It was just astounding, absolutely astounding this weekend. Watching Bob Schieffer all but kiss John McCain on the lips on Face the Nation. At the same time, over on Meet the Press, Tom Brokaw disassembling Joe Biden. And Joe said, oh yeah, she gave a pretty good speech. Come on, guys. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on this Monday, the 8th of September. And a couple of points I just think need to be made, and we need to be talking about how to get out of this thing. The Republicans are successfully now running against the Republican Party. You will recall last Monday at the Republican National, at the RNC, I sat down with Pete Sessions, the congressman from Texas, and said, basically, I'm paraphrasing here, I said, you're going to be running, your party is going to run against the Republican Party. The McCain-Palin ticket is going to run against the Republican Party. And he essentially said, yeah, that's the strategy. Run against the, because the Republicans are such a badly damaged brand, the only people who can beat them are people who claim not to be Republicans. Who instead claim to be Mavericks. Now, keep in mind, John McCain proudly proclaimed that he voted with Bush more than 95% of the time over the last 7 years. 100% of the time in the last year, 98% of the time in the last 24 months, 95% the last 5 years. He votes with George Bush. John McCain does acknowledge that climate change is real. He hasn't laid out, he has laid out some proposals to do something about it, but I would say that they're nowhere near as serious as what really needs to be done. But he's opposed Bush on that. He opposed Bush on immigration, although he's backpedaled from that very quickly. And he joined with Russ Feingold in the McCain-Feingold bill to reform campaign finance, a small step in the direction of campaign finance reform. Three things out of a 25-year career. And so he's characterizing himself, this guy who votes with Bush 95% of the time, as the Maverick. In fact, and Sarah Palin, of course, the one who campaigned. Her little town of Wasilla, hired a Jack Abramoff-connected lobbyist and got over $1,000 per person, one of the top, if not the top, city in the entire United States in terms of pork barrel money, earmarks, coming into a town. And even at that, when she became mayor of the town, had a surplus, and when she left, it was millions of dollars in debt. Well, she's a Republican. But she's the queen of pork, as Carl Wolfson calls her, my colleague here at KPOJ. She really is. This is a woman who hired a lobbyist for her town, and the same thing, the oil companies, the big oil companies in Alaska, good friend of the oil companies, raised the taxes on them. Why? So that she could pass the money out to the citizens of Alaska. Why? To gain political power. This is the kind of thing, by the way, that the Republicans for years and years have complained about Democrats doing, only it wasn't just a gratuitous, here, have a check. It was things like Social Security and Medicare. So anyway, we have the queen of pork, Sarah Palin. And we've got John McCain, who is anything but a maverick. He is right in lockstep with the Bush administration. Wants the war in Iraq to last as long as... even the Bush administration is saying, okay, fine, 16, 18 months, we'll set a timeline. They're agreeing with Maliki. Not John McCain. John McCain, the list goes out. So here is the new ad. Here's the new ad.
The original Mavericks. He fights pork barrel spending. She stopped the bridge to nowhere.
Which, by the way, is not true. She advocated for the bridge to nowhere. She got the funds for the bridge to nowhere. And then when she canceled the bridge to nowhere in her state, she kept the money.
He took on the drug industry.
No, not quite.
She took on big oil.
No, not so.
He battled Republicans and reformed Washington. She battled Republicans and reformed Alaska. They'll make history. They'll change Washington. McCain Palin. Real change.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
See, this is the Republicans running against the Republicans. And I, you know, over the weekend, we our little community of 34 homes had a on Sunday get together in one of our neighbors' houses. You know, just everybody came over, and it was a potluck. And I'm sitting talking with people who, with a couple of people who I have tremendous respect for. One a college professor, a former college professor, he's retired, others, and a couple of people were saying, you know, I thought that Barack Obama guy was pretty good, but, you know, John McCain and Sarah Palin, they're really serious about shaking up Washington, and that's what really needs to happen. And I'm like, what? The meme is out there. The Karl Rove strategy is working. Boil it down to two or three simple talking points. Take the words, change, reform, maverick, take those words and beat them into the ground. And the Obama campaign is not pushing back on this stuff anything close to the way they should be. And it really concerns me. I mean, this bounce, this increase, you know, I think we may be looking at a repeat of the Kerry camp of the 2004 campaign. And it concerns me tremendously. Now, at the same time, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, this is a made-to-order opportunity for the Democratic Party, even though it was Lyndon Johnson who set this thing up. This is a made-to-order opportunity. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, originally Fannie Mae was the Federal National Mortgage Association. It was started in 1930-something, by 1938, by FDR. As a way to deliver to banks cheap money that they could use to loan to people so that they could buy houses. This was a federal agency. Now, it turned out that supplying cheap money to banks and then repackaging that money and selling those as securities actually generated a small profit. In some cases, you know, when the economy was really good, it generated a large profit. And so the, you know, corporate America was salivating at this, just like they are Social Security. And so in 1968, as the war in Vietnam was getting very, very expensive, Lyndon Johnson was looking for ways to hide the fact that the federal deficit was going out of control. This is what produced the inflation that Jimmy Carter inherited as was being wrung out of the economy, just like Bush's war 10, 15 years down the road when these 10 and 20-year Treasury bills that he's selling to finance the war come due. Are going to do the same thing here. So anyhow, as this inflation was happening, as he was doing this, Johnson was trying to figure out a way to get as much government spending or government debt off the books as he could. And there's Fannie Mae, and so he privatizes them. He says, "Okay, we're going to sell stock in these things, and have stockholders." So what happens? Well, Fannie Mae, for example, shows a profit. And as a consequence of that profit, gee, what happens? Here's a report. This is May 2nd, 2007. This is a year and a half ago. Fannie Mae's profit rose 26% in 2005. They're looking back a year. The company also raised its quarterly dividends by 10 cents to 50 cents a share as of May 25th. Fannie Mae earned $6.3 billion or $6.01 a share. In other words, the profits that Fannie Mae, see, back when Fannie Mae was a government organization, if it made profit, that went into either a Fannie Mae trust fund or back into the federal general account. But now that it's a private corporation, where does that profit go? It goes to people like Dick Cheney, big multimillionaire investors who have bought stock in Fannie Mae. So when times are good, it shows a profit. The profit goes to the millionaires and billionaires in America who were the big investors in Fannie Mae. Now, when it's losing money, there's no fund left over because that money got distributed to the shareholders. So they come to us and they say, we'd like you the taxpayers of America, to pick up this $5 trillion tab. This is a great example. What is happening with Fannie Mae right now is the exact same thing that happened with Social Security in Chile when they privatized Social Security as part of a requirement from the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, to get loans back 15, 20 years ago. It's the exact same thing. And it's the exact same thing that will happen in America if we privatize Social Security the way John McCain wants it done. Fannie Mae never should have been privatized, and they shouldn't be bailing it out right now. They should be nationalizing it. Same with Freddie Mac. Just nationalize it. Buy out the stockholders and turn it back into a government organization. And when it starts making a profit, pay that money back to the stockholders. That would be the taxpayers. So here we have the Democrats absolutely blowing it in terms of opportunities on messaging. The Republicans running a brilliant Karl Rove strategy. I'm frankly very concerned. And in the midst of this, the millionaires and billionaires are walking away with an even greater profit than they ever imagined.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman back here broadcasting live from our home base studios in Little Beirut. The People's Republic of Little Beirut, recovering from the DNC and the RNC. Fortunately, the thing that got me through when I was in the Twin Cities was that Char over at Mad Woman Bakery, madwomanfoods.com is the website, by the way, gluten-free and low-glycemic real food, but it's gluten-free. I have celiac disease, and I can't eat, you know, wheat, rye, or barley, or anything with gluten. Homemade ice cream, gluten-free cones, all kinds of... Anyhow, they sent me a care package. I think I gained 2 pounds. But, well, boy, it was great. And so, tip of the hat, Char, Brendan, everybody at Mad Woman Bakery, thank you so much for that. Do appreciate it. Okay, what are the odds of winning the New Jersey lottery twice in 4 months? 1 in 17 trillion. And it's happened. Okay, in Geneva, Switzerland, the Large Hadron Collider, they're going to try something that's never been tried before. They've been working on this thing for 20-some-odd years, building this giant super collider, and it's going to blow a couple of particles into each other at such a high speed that it may create a tiny black hole. Now, black holes are these event horizons. They're these little things where entire stars get swallowed into a black hole that's the size of a pinhead all around the universe. One of the theories is that actually there's multiple universes, that it's like froth, and each universe is a bubble in the foam. And our universe is just one of those little bubbles in the froth. And that black holes are where the matter moves from one universe into another. Now, this is just one of many theories, but we do know that black holes, you know, a black hole, if there was a black hole in this universe, or just in the solar system, it could suck up the Earth, the Moon, the you know, Mercury, Venus, the Sun. So they're going to create a black hole, and the odds that it will actually destroy the planet, 1 in a trillion. Which is 17 times better than the odds that you'd win the New Jersey lottery, twice in 4 months, which has been done. So a few people a little strange. Okay, back to Sarah Palin, back to the election. Sarah Palin's preacher.
We want to pray, and I want, please pray for Sarah. I know for Governor Sarah, I know we had an opportunity to pray over you. It was an honor to declare that word over you with the wisdom. But there were some things about the natural resources, about the state. There were some things that God wants to tap into to be a refuge for the lower 48.
A refuge.
And I believe Alaska is one of the refuge states. Come on, you guys, in the last days. And hundreds and thousands of people are going to come to the state to seek refuge, and the church has to be ready to minister to them.
Right, but not gays, not Jews, not blacks, not Hispanics. But nonetheless, the state's going to be a refuge state. Her pastor, and, you know, this is a church that she is very, very... Barack Obama was not in the pews when Reverend Wright was going off, but that got played for 8 solid days. The main thing in the news cycle for 8 solid days. Will this be in the news cycle or this? Sarah Palin gave the introductory speech to the Alaska Independence Party this year. Her husband has been a member for years. She told him, great, you know, keep on going. You're doing a great job, et cetera, et cetera. Here is the founder of the American Independence Party, Joe Vogler, talking about his perspective on America.
The fires of hell are frozen.
Let me turn this down just a little bit here.
The fires of hell are frozen glaciers compared to my hatred for the American government. And I won't be buried under their damn flag. I'll be buried in Dawson. And when Alaska is an independent nation, they can bring my bones home back to my country.
The fires of hell.
The fires of hell are frozen glaciers.
Are frozen glaciers compared to his hatred for the American government. This is Sarah Palin's husband's good buddy?
The fires of hell are frozen glaciers compared to my hatred for the American government. And
Now, is that going to be in the news cycle, at the top of the news cycle for 7 straight days? It hasn't even shown up in the corporate media, to the best of my knowledge. By the way, speaking of the corporate media or the mainstream media, you might want to check out VanityFair.com. I'll just leave it at that. If you go to VanityFair.com, it's a fascinating little timeline over there. And, you know, I know that the folks at Daily Kos were too wimped out by this thing, but Vanity Fair does their fact-checking. I've been published in Vanity Fair or co-published twice now and had to go through their fact-checking. They're very, very rigorous. Very rigorous. Just check out VanityFair.com and the Sarah Palin conspiracy timeline. It's right there on the front page, the link to it. And you'll find, you know, it's very, very interesting. So here we have Sarah Palin getting a completely different treatment from the media than either Obama or Biden. Oh, you know, let's hands off, and we can't talk about this, we can't talk about that, and we can't, and she'll talk to the media when she damn well pleases. Excuse me, she's running for vice president of the United States. They're making claims about, she's making lies in her speeches, saying that she's, you know, John McCain saying she sold the state jet on eBay. Excuse me, well, she listed it, but she ended up selling it to a broker for a loss. Well, I guess, you know, she should get, I suppose, some credit for selling the damn thing, but still, I mean, lies in the campaign and in the ads, and they just let them slide.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at
$300,000 worth of clothing and jewelry to her big night at the RNC. And Barack Obama, who just recently paid off his student loans, is the elitist? What am I missing here? What we're all missing is the fact that, and this gets back to, you know, Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann on NBC being pulled off election coverage, the fact that the corporate media in this country gets it that the Republican Party and frankly the established Democratic Party, the classic establishment of the Democratic Party, works to their interest. And Barack Obama is saying that he's not only going to take on the entrenched Republican special interests and stop, for example, tax subsidies for companies that offshore jobs. He's going to take on the Democratic entrenched special interests. And the corporate media is looking at that going, you know, this is not going to help our profits. This is not going to help us further destroy the middle class of America and further increase the wealth of the very few. And so, you know, we're just not going to talk about these things. We're not going to talk about Sarah Palin's weird, her pastor problem. Her husband's I hate America problem. I mean, here you had Barack Obama's wife saying for the first time in her life she was really proud of her country, that Americans were really engaged and African Americans running all these things. And that's some kind of scandal that ran for months in the news cycle. And here's Palin and her husband and their guru. I mean, she gave the address. She sent the videotapes of these guys. Here, welcome. And he's saying that the fires of hell are...
The fires of hell are frozen glaciers compared to my hatred for the American government. And I...
This is Joe Vogler, the founder of the Alaska Independence Party. Sarah's party? Sarah's husband's party? Sarah... But no, it's not going to get covered by the news media. No. We've got to have toadies and suck-ups. You can't have bias in the news. Well, don't look at Fox. Of course, we'll have Sean Hannity be commenting on things, and we'll have it, but not in them, not in the real news media. No, can't have that. Lorenzo in Sandusky, Ohio. Hey, Lorenzo, what's on your mind?
All right, Tom. First of all, I think just serious listeners, we get screwed because we only get you for an hour, and I'm really disappointed in that. But back to my topic, I think us left wingers, we need to start referring to George Bush as we only have one maverick in the White House. Do we need another one?
And that's an excellent one. George Bush is one of the most anti-American mavericks ever. Yeah, do we need another one? Excellent, excellent, Lorenzo. Thank you. Tony in Phoenix. Hey, Tony. Tony, you're on the air. Tony's not on the air. Gary in Seattle, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Listen, you're getting out the word, so that's good. I think that Palin is Rove's last roll of the dice, and I think that she should be asked three questions. I said two to your screener, but then the third one popped into my head. Does she believe that the apocalypse is imminent? Is it, number two, is it her duty as vice president to help it along? And number three, which would be more important to her, the Bible or the Constitution?
Excellent questions. I wonder if we get a straight answer. I mean, you know, but yeah, excellent questions. Thank you, Gary. Well said. Marty in L.A., listening on K-Talk. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Tom. I want to appreciate what you said before. And to the extent that people criticize John Kerry for not responding in 2004 to all the charges, Obama's got a double problem. Not only does he not respond, but they also should be on the attack, because then McCain would have to respond. But instead, they just play defense.
Yeah, I know. Joe Biden had such an opportunity. He had so many openings this weekend, and he didn't take any of them, and he didn't take them seriously. And then on the other hand, you had McCain over there with Bob Schieffer, A, saying things that were factually incorrect, otherwise known as lies, and B, say, for example, he's going to take on the special interests, he's going to get rid of all these lobbyists. Well, why not ask him about the fact that the guy who's running his campaign is one of the biggest lobbyists in Washington, D.C.? The other guy who's the chairman of his campaign is one of the biggest, heads up one of the biggest lobbying firms in Washington, D.C. Bob Schieffer asked none of those questions. Instead, he said, oh, you're going to get rid of the lobbyists, huh? Well, that's great. Let's move on to the next question. Let's see. Can I kiss your left side or your right side? How about can I kiss your ring, sir? Susan in New York City. Hey, Susan. Susan, you're on the air. Susan's gone, too. Okay. Richard in Deerfield, Florida. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Tom. I guess that's why you're a great radio talk program host. You're going full circle, and I was curious about why you were so shocked and surprised about the Republicans forging ahead.
I'm not.
I know. And then you came full circle and you answered your own indignation.
Yeah. No, of course. And that's the problem, Richard, is that what we're seeing right now is more basically Bob Schrum politics. It's the nice guy politics. It's Democrats thinking that they can win on the issues. Yes, Democrats have the issues. That's real simple. I mean, it's not even rocket science. Democrats have the issues, but the Republicans, The Republicans understand that, as they said, this is going to be won on personality, not issues, and that's what they're doing. Patsy in San Francisco. Hey, Patsy.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you. I have
Thank
a couple
you.
Of ideas on how Obama should fight back. One of them is he should have a economic conversation or call an economic summit, somehow grab the national spotlight, either in an outside place or with a lot of television coverage, where he would, you know, build on Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, 11th Bank to go down, and then perhaps and pull up his ideas again, as well as, you know, throw back a few things to the McCain camp about their lies around.
They just need to be calling this. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. We're going to go to a break right now because my call screen software just went kaflooey, and we'll have it when we come back. But thank you. Spot on. But what they need to do, here's real simple advice to the Democratic Party. It's very straightforward. Get a half a dozen talking points. 3, 4, 5, 6 reasons why we should vote for Obama and Biden and reasons why we should not vote for John McCain and Sarah Palin. And never deviate from those messages.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman radio program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Find out more at Teamster.org, 866-303-2270, your telephone number, TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, AirAmerica.com for our free video web stream. Alice in Renton, Washington. Hey, Alice, welcome to the show. What's on your mind
Hi,
today?
Good morning. Well, I think the Democrats' glory is at once their Achilles heel because their desire to be fair. I mean, the Republicans aren't troubled by that at all.
Yeah.
And, for instance, putting Pat Buchanan, for one, on a talk show that's, mainly to the left so he can refute it.
Yeah.
I can't agree with that kind of...
You know, during the Republican convention, there were virtually... And there were entire segments, entire days, where there wasn't a single Democrat refuting the Republican talking points. Whereas during the Democratic convention, you had Republicans on... In fact, the majority of the commentators were Republicans on all the networks, rebutting everything that the Democrats said. This is the corporate media at its worst. And oddly enough, next hour, Tim Graham from the Media Research Center, the conservative group that says it's all the left-wing media out there, it's going to be on trying to, convince us up is down or something. We'll see. But, you're absolutely right, Alice. Thank you very much for that call. Tony in Phoenix. Hey, Tony.
Yes. Tom, I really enjoy your show, and I believe that you're just as important as a military guy for the freedom of this country. My comment is about Palin. Barack, if he wanted to really fight back McCain right now, he should have commercials saying, we have an administration we could not question for 8 years. Now we have a vice president running that we can't question today.
Yeah. Now they should be pounding this thing. They should be hitting this so hard, and they should have been ever since the first. They should have been doing it the day of the convention, and they're not. And it's time for them to get active and get out there and do it. Spot on, Tony. Bob in Miami. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom. Hey. Palin, you made a comment that God was in favor of the Iraq war as if
yes.
he's talking to God.
I mean,
the question is he talking to God or is he talking to, I don't know, maybe Satan?
I don't know. You know, Bob, it reminds me of the Abraham Lincoln comment. Lincoln said, we shouldn't be praying that God's on our side. We should be praying that we're on God's side. And that's, that's definitely not the way the Palin's going. You look at some of these, thank you, Bob, for the call. You look at some of these videos of her and her church, and it's basically like prayer is the Christmas list, you know? It's, hey, Santa, I'd like this and this and this, please. On the one hand, I'm loath to criticize somebody's religious practices. On the other hand, this is somebody who wants to be vice president of the United States and believes that the world is 6,000 years old, that global warming is not created by humans, that human reproductive biology should not be taught in our schools, and who apparently runs organization, has asked that books be censored from libraries and runs institutions like her city and her state in an absolute Dick Cheney, take no prisoner fashion. And somebody we should be very concerned about. Jim in Burbank, California. Hey, Jim.
Well, I'm insulted by Sarah Palin when she uses God or religion that way to justify their decisions that they've already made, like putting a pipeline in Alaska or going to war in Iraq. But I didn't call to say that. I called to talk about the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac,
right.
And just to say that the American dream of home ownership is something that is a lot more identifiable than, let's say, Social Security for people. And what seems to be happening, like you said, the partial privatization that's already happened, they're wanting to make it a complete one by selling it off eventually. I read in the paper today that second stage.
Basically what they're going to do is they're going to dump it on the next administration. And if it's a McCain administration, then the odds are what they'll do is they'll break Fannie and Freddie into a dozen smaller corporations, smaller organizations, and totally privatize them and put them back out in the marketplace. And 5, 10, 15 years down the road, we will be in even worse shape than we are now, because all the profit will be sucked out of the system that's underpinning on our home mortgage system, and all the liabilities will be dumped back on government. On the other hand, if it goes back to Obama, hopefully he'll nationalize the things. He'll put them back the way they were before Lyndon Johnson got a hold of them in 68, and, to help pay off the war in Vietnam. And we'll have government agencies that do what government agencies are supposed to do, which is protect the public welfare and the public good and the commons.
The reason why I like democracy is because it diversifies. It diversifies control of a government in the hands of many, as well as it helps to diversify the control of capital in the hands of many. And what's going on with this Fannie Mae is where it's going to be just trying to concentrate our houses in the hands of a few, just like the King of England who owns all the property.
Here's this from Reuters. The head of Fannie Mae, this is from April 7th of 2008, okay, so this is a few months ago. The head of Fannie Mae reaped a 7% rise in pay last year to $13.4 million, which puts him in the top one-tenth of 1% of wage earners in the United States. While the company lost money and the country suffered its worst housing crisis in years, Fannie Mae chief executive Daniel Mudd also received $5.4 million from stock awards that vested in 2007. This is so wrong. Fannie Mae should be run, as it was before 1968, by government bureaucrats with green eye shades who are making, $75,000, whatever, maybe $55,000 or $60,000, government salaries with a good pension and good health care and 25 years and you're out, and rather than some guy making $14 million and trying to jack up the stock price so his vested stock options increase in value.
The reason why they did that, they let it all go to blazes, is because they knew the government would run in and save the day, which is the same reason why the police in Minneapolis did what they did, because they knew that they were well insured against wrongful police lawsuits.
So you
just set up the whole system that way.
Yeah, they just consider, like New York, they consider the lawsuits a cost of doing business. I mean, that's just what they're doing. But this is a classic example of taking the public good and privatizing it, sucking the profit out of it, and then when there's a loss, when the business cycle turns down, saying, oh no, all of a sudden we're socialists. Not even socialists. All of a sudden we're communists. Give me a break. Dennis in New York City. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, Tom. I called you 2 years ago, by the way. I have 2 points. One, if you elect McCain, you continue the Republican FDA that did nothing while thousands of prescription drug users died. You continue an EPA that lied to police and firemen who worked down at Ground Zero, and a lot of those police officers and firemen got sick and died. And so you, when you elect McCain, you continue a Republican executive agency set that kills people.
Right. McCain is on record that he wants to make government even smaller, which means to destroy more of these agencies and make them work even worse.
Okay. I also have a website. May I give it?
Sure.
www.democratz.org. I told Bernie Sanders 2 years ago how we could end the war by having people calling General Electric at 800-386-1215 and demanding that the CEO get Bush and Cheney to resign and end the war, and then people won't buy their product. We got to boycott some strategic GOP contributors.
Yeah, the problem with that, Dennis, you know, I get your point. Here's the problem with boycotts. First of all, you're not going to get enough people all at the same time to all do it. Secondly, you've got, we now have monopoly capitalism. You've got corporations that so control, I mean, you've got three food companies that control about 80% of the entire food supply in the United States. You've got a handful. You've got five media companies that control over 85, 90% of everything anybody in the United States hears, sees, or reads. We are to the point where boycotts, frankly, just don't work. And instead, what we've got to do is just get more and more active in democracy. The odds are getting harder and harder, higher and higher. The slope is steeper and steeper to get somebody elected in office who's actually going to take on the machine. But it's still possible, and we've got to do it. Kelly in Grand Junction, Colorado. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
Hey, I'm just on that little clip you play of what's his name, Sarah Palin and Todd Palin's buddy.
Yeah.
You Joe need to clean that up a little bit so it's a little easier to hear.
Yeah.
But anyway, can we encourage people to write some letters to the editor using those quotes and attributing to who they're attributable to?
Yeah, this is Joe Vogler, the founder of the American or the Alaskan Independence Party.
The fires they hail are frozen glaciers.
Joe Vogler.
Compared to my hatred for the American government.
There you go.
Okie dokie. Yeah, anyway, I just, you know, people need to hear this. We've been beat to death with Reverend Wright, so we need to be beat to death with Joe Vogler.
Yeah, and Joe Vogler, yeah. And Reverend Wright was 8 straight days in the news cycle. 8 straight days. And I haven't heard Joe Vogler even named in the corporate media. Not even named.
I haven't either. That's what I'm wondering. Can you get Rachel Maddow to bring this up a little bit?
Well, that's up to Rachel, but it needs to go way beyond that. I mean, it wasn't Rachel, you know, Reverend Wright wasn't the province of just one, it wasn't just Sean Hannity, for example, you know, to talk about the other side. It was right across the board. So where is the bias in the media? We'll talk to Tim Graham about that right after the break. Stick around, 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This is very, very interesting times here. What's going on with the media? Tim Graham is with us. He's the director of media analysis at the Media Research Center, MRC.org, their website. Hey, Tim.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You guys are suggesting that somehow the corporate media in the United States is going after Sarah Palin? Do I have this right? Or going after John McCain?
I think generally we feel that the corporate media, as you put it, is a pretty liberal institution, and yes, it has gone beyond just asking them tough questions to making really savage remarks.
I have not heard any questions at all asked of Sarah Palin, and I've not heard any remarks from the corporate media. What are you talking about?
Well, I think it's amazing that several minutes after Mrs. Palin was announced, we had John Roberts on CNN suggesting that it was a bad form for her to say yes with a with a child with Down syndrome. And we've seen a lot of people
to say yes to what?
Including Sally Quinn, going on this bender. We have this odd prospect of liberals suggesting Sarah Palin should have never said yes if she was a good mother. But instead, she's a crummy mother because she decided to say yes.
To say yes? You're talking about not having an abortion.
No, that she decided to say yes to McCain.
Oh, to become the vice president.
Right.
You know, the probably the most famous person who attacked her for that is Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura has written an editorial saying that she's got 5 children, including a special needs child. She should be at home with her children. That's, you know, that's, to the best of my knowledge, that's the major voice out there that has said that. And you know, Dr. Laura is an outspoken conservative. But I, you know, these are not the issues. The fact of the matter is that Palin said, for example, "I protected the taxpayers by vetoing wasteful spending." I'm quoting from her speech, "and championed reform to end the abuses of earmark spending by Congress. I told the Congress thanks, but no thanks for that bridge to nowhere." As a matter of fact, she got $27 million in earmarks for her state. She hired a lobbyist associated with Jack Abramoff. She got more money per capita for her little town of Wasilla when she was the mayor than any other city in America. She's the queen of pork. I have not heard one person in the corporate media point this out or ask her about, well, they can't ask her about it because she's refusing to do interviews unless you want to come up to Alaska and be very, very sweet, apparently. But and she did not reject the plans for the bridge to nowhere. In fact, she still has the money. The state took the money.
Well, let me respond first by saying I respect Dr. Laura for having that opinion, but the difference between Dr. Laura and everybody in the liberal media is that's actually consistent for Dr. Laura. Fact of the matter is John Roberts and Sally Quinn and all of these other people on the left who are taking on Sarah Palin, none of them would hold that position when, you know, if Hillary Clinton had 5 children and was running for president.
Sally Quinn and John Roberts are irrelevant.
Well, I think that's the media. I mean, they're more relevant.
Yesterday you had Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation with John McCain. And John McCain said he's going to get the lobbyists out of Washington, D.C. And Bob Schieffer didn't even bother to say, isn't the head of your campaign one of the largest lobbyists in Washington, D.C.? Isn't the chairman of your campaign, the other guy, also one of the 3 largest lobbyists in Washington, D.C.? They're not even asking him softball questions.
I don't think that's true. I think he also basically suggested that I thought Bob Schieffer sounded like you, Tom. He was talking about how we needed more taxes and rationing. I think the fact of the matter is we can agree on this. Nobody's getting the lobbyists out of Washington. As long as there's a government.
Actually, if you send a check to the Barack Obama campaign that has INC at the end of the, it gets mailed back to you. He's not taking money from lobbyists.
All right. Here's the problem with Obama. You're saying she took $27 million in earmarks when she was mayor of Wasilla.
Right.
Barack Obama has requested $740 million in earmarks in the last 3 years. That's according to Barack Obama.
Well,
Barack
he's
Obama
way behind
has requested,
her then because she got $750 million in 2 years for Alaska.
Barack Obama requested 100 earmarks in the last appropriations bill. All I'm saying to you is...
But Barack Obama is not a hypocrite here, Tim.
Yes,
Barack Obama is not campaigning against earmarks. She is. And yet she got she actually got $750 million in earmarks in 2 years as governor of Alaska, the largest per capita request in the nation. She is the queen of pork, and she's out there lying about this. She is campaigning on this, you know, I'm anti-pork. I mean, it is just breathtaking. Listen to this ad. I mean, this is just incredible.
The original Mavericks. He fights pork barrel spending. She stopped the bridge to nowhere.
That's a lie. And this is the new McCain ad. I mean, how can you... And they're not being challenged by the corporate media in America, Tim Graham.
There's been... I would say that this earmarks issue has been one of the dominant questions they've been asking about Sarah Palin. It was part of the convention coverage. I saw... PBS, for heaven's sake, Gwen Ifill was asking Tucker Bounds of the McCain campaign about her earmarks. This is the irony, though, is that you have this big
PBS is not the corporate media.
You have this thing about hypocrisy. This is what I'm saying. It's funny for the liberals and the Obama campaign to somehow suggest that it's outrageous. You're sitting here telling me you think it's outrageous that she would request earmarks when you support earmarks.
No,
I don't understand
what I am saying.
Well, why are
is
you
outrageous?
Not a hypocrite?
what I am saying is outrageous is that she is campaigning on wanting to stop what she is characterizing as corruption associated with earmarks when she was the queen of earmarks. We're talking, by the way, with Tim Graham, the Media Research Center, their website, mrc.org. Tim, I mean, you know, just... just look at some of these things in the speeches. These speeches were full of lies. McCain said that Obama's health care plan is going to force small businesses to cut jobs, going to put a bureaucrat between you and your doctor. In fact, it exempts small businesses, and those who have insurance can keep the coverage they have. It's not going to do any such thing. He attacked Obama for voting for corporate welfare for oil companies. In fact, Obama voted to raise taxes on oil companies, $300 million. He said McCain said oil imports send $700 million a year to countries that don't like us. Actually, $536 billion of that is going to Canada, Mexico, and the United Kingdom. He said he promised to increase wind, tide, and solar energy, although his energy plan has no money, zero, for renewable energies. I mean, his speech was full of lies, and nobody in the corporate media called him out on it. And
that's
you're saying we have liberal media?
It's not true, Tom. I swear you don't watch television. I mean, these CNN's American Morning came on. And I think they fact-checked both McCain's and Palin's speeches, and the same program didn't do so for Obama and Biden. And I suppose you would tell me that's because they told everything they said was the truth. Here's the problem, Tom, and that is when you...
Tell me the lies that Obama and Biden said.
Well, I would start with Obama. I would start, and this is, I suppose, more a metaphor than a reality, but Obama got up and said, This administration let a major American city drown. That is a savagely cruel thing to say.
You know,
and it's
almost
untrue.
2,000 people died in New Orleans.
If
How
Bush
often do you hear
kill
that
them,
number?
The government rescued tens of thousands of people. Here's what I'm trying to say to
Bush
you.
Bush was out in Arizona, Tim, cutting a birthday cake with John McCain as people were on their roofs.
That's not the that's
begging
not the
for somebody to rescue
that's
them,
not a
and
question.
They had to make a CD
a,
to show to Bush to demonstrate to him that there were people dying.
That's a question of political impressions now. It's not a question of fact-checking. My point to you is simply, let's say, for example, John McCain gets up in his speech and says, Obama will raise taxes, Obama's health plan will hurt business. You can't say that's true, and you can't say that's false, because guess what? Obama hasn't been elected yet. We have no idea what's going to be in that bill when it actually goes there. And you can say, well, what it says on paper today is not what McCain says it's going to do. But you know as well.
So you're
as
saying that if McCain lies
know,
about what Obama says he's going to do, that's okay because he probably won't do it anyway.
I'm saying to you that a candidate ought to be able to say Obama will raise taxes, and he'll say, no, I'm not going to raise taxes. Well, this is what we could have said in 1992. George Bush said Bill Clinton will raise taxes. And
then why
didn't
Obama just say McCain's going to start a nuclear war?
Wait now. And Clinton said, I will not raise taxes. Clinton went in and passed the biggest tax increase in American history.
Actually,
what
that
I'm
was
saying
Ronald Reagan's decision.
What I'm saying to you is simply that some matters are not truth or falsehood. When we're making predictions about the future, we're looking into a crystal ball, and to some extent you can't simply say, well, when McCain says Obama will raise taxes, he's lying. You'd have to have a time machine to say he's lying.
Obama has laid out his tax plan. He said if you're making under $250,000, you're going to get a tax cut. If you're making over $250,000, you're going to get a tax increase.
It won't
He's quite
happen,
clear
Tom.
And quite specific about it.
It won't happen, Tom. He'll never cut taxes for 95% of Americans.
We'll see. Tim Graham, Media Research Center, mrc.org. Tim, thanks for dropping by.
Sure.
Good mixing it up with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Brought to you in part by the SEIU, Service Employees International Union, has 2 million members dedicated to creating justice for all American workers and their families. on the web at SEIU.org. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Bob in Port Orchard, Washington. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, you were talking with this last guy about the corporate media. I wonder where they've been in checking on this airplane story. There's two ways you get around Alaska, either by a plane or by boat.
Or dog sled.
Yeah.
Or snowmobile.
She bragged about selling this plane and, you know, that it was a terrible thing to have.
Right.
What's she doing now to get around?
Well, I'm guessing, I mean, she actually might be right in this regard, that the plane was overkill. I'm guessing that she's either flying on commercial jets or they're chartering planes on a on an as-needed basis.
Or is there a little corporate jet?
Well, that's my point. If they're flying privately and they're chartering things, then basically they've privatized what might have been a state function, but it might have been a bloated state function. I frankly don't think that that's the thing that, you know, that we should point to and say, you know, this is a failing of Sarah Palin. It actually may be something that she did that was, you know, there was a broad consensus this was a great thing. But the problem is that John McCain is out there saying she sold it on eBay at a profit. And, well, she listed it on eBay three times. Nobody bought it. She sold it to a broker at a loss. And so what we need to be pointing out is the fact that they're taking, you know, moderately good stories that they could easily tell the truth about and turning them into lies. It's like these guys just lie at the drop of the hat, and it blows my mind. Ashante in Chicago, am I pronouncing that right, Ashante?
Ashante.
Ashante, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Two things I wanted to say. First, thank you for bringing to the attention of Hurricane Katrina. And you were absolutely right. It's blood on the Bush's hands. It was over 1,000 people that were laid maimed in the street, could not move, and it was horrible. So that guy to say, oh, no, Bush didn't have anything to do with that. That was crazy. I mean, for him to sit there and just to admit that, that was just crazy. And
I mean, think of how many times, Asante, think of how many times we have heard the number of people who died on 9/11 repeated from the lips of news commentators and Republicans over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I keep waiting for the Democrats to start repeating the number. And I, frankly, I've heard it so rarely, I don't even know the number. I think it's like 1,823 or something like that, the number of people who died in New Orleans as a consequence of the absolute and utter failure of the Bush administration to respond to that hurricane. And
you
now that they've got a Republican governor in there, they're doing absolutely everything they can to make sure that everything looks just great. But
of
when
course,
it was a Democratic governor, it was like, oh, no, we're not going to help.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But the other thing I wanted to say is that I'm noticing, and I don't know if anybody else is, I'm noticing that when they're going to these little cities or whatever, majority of the residents there is 90% white. There are no blacks, no Hispanics that they're courting. I thought it was country first. I'm part of this country. How come you're not courting me? And I find it to be an insult.
This is what I saw at the RNC, too. I think that there were 36 African-Americans at the entire Republican National Convention. And, the Republican Party has become basically the party of xenophobes and racists and rich white guys.
Right.
You know,
but again,
bottom line.
Also, too, when they're doing these town hall meetings, if you look at the statistics of the actual community, and she keeps saying, hockey mom, what about the football moms? What about the basketball moms? She's not even bringing that up. And I really think somebody needs to call them out on that.
Yeah. Well, I think you just did. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate
Thanks.
It. Good to hear from you. John in Santa Barbara, California. Hey, maybe John.
Hey, how are you today, Tom?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up, John?
Hey, you know, a couple of things. First of all, this myth that the Republicans keep putting out that Palin has galvanized their base.
Well, she's galvanized the anti-abortion folks. But here's the amazing thing. I mean, I looked at People magazine this week. You know, they've got her on the cover. And I don't think I've read People magazine more than once in my whole entire life. In fact, it was interesting as I was going through the magazine, every single ad was for women, you know, products for women. There was apparently they don't expect any men to read the magazine. And it was a one-page fluff piece on Palin. And it was a really sweet fluff piece with a lot of pictures. But basically, I think there's a large swath of America that's about as deep as their political sophistication goes.
Right. And the first problem with this whole myth is that the conservative base had been mostly galvanized already. They already they were already spooked to the point of wetting their pants over the made-up fantasy of the secret Muslim black man and his black militant wife turning the White House into a flop house for the Black Panther Party. They're already there.
That's what they're trying to do, by the way, by demonizing community organizing. They're trying to associate the phrase community organizing in people's minds with organizing black people. Even though,
right.
And the Catholics are quite upset about this. There's a whole bunch of Catholic websites because the community group that Barack Obama was the leader of, and he was the executive. He took it from a one employee organization to, as I recall, a 30 employee organization, increased their budget. It was a coalition of either 6 or 8 Catholic organizations in Chicago that he was working with. And that's making fun of.
Well, what the pick did for McCain is get the last dredges of a dying voting bloc lined up for him. The problem is the Palin pick and the traditional Republican nonsense that she delivered has the side effect of rousting another base, the Democrats. And
well, we'll see.
Gonna,
right now, according to USA Today, McCain's got a 10-point lead. Go figure.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com. Drop into our live chat room, AirAmerica.com. Our free live video stream, free live audio streams, free archives of 6 years of our shows over at TomHartman.com. Pieces of them, some of the coolest pieces of them. All air, all free. Just like, you know, when we go on the road, the whole thing. Anyhow, Van in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Van, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hello, Tom. It's a privilege to talk to you.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I got really three quick ones. Number one, I don't believe in polls. That's run by corporate media or whatever, so I don't even take stock in that. Number two, I think that we should have a writing campaign to Barack Obama, to have Obama and McCain or Biden and Palin have a debate with the Women's League of Voters the way they used to.
Yeah.
So they can kind of pull Palin out to see exactly what, you know, she...
Except, you know, the League of Women Voters is one of those community organizing groups.
Right, right.
We can't have that.
Yeah, I know. But I think we should have the progressives, the Democrats, the liberals should have a writing campaign to Obama campaign to push that.
Yeah.
And my last thing is that, like the young lady was saying before about Katrina, under the radar when everybody was having this hysteria about Palin, Bush committed... to giving Georgia $1 billion.
Right, the country of Georgia.
Right,
the country that bombed the good citizens of Svengali in the middle of the night to gin up this war, and then Russia reacted, and some would say overreacted, but Cheney was over there last week, and yep, here's $1 billion for you, Mr. Saakashvili, the guy who declared martial law, the guy who put protesters in prison, the guy who seized a television station, even though it was owned by Rupert Murdoch, oddly enough.
Right.
You know, this guy is hardly a small-D Democrat. And
I'm just wondering where he got the $1 billion from. It's like where did he pull it out at?
Like everything else, he borrowed it from our grandchildren, Van.
Right. So, people need to protest about that, but I know it was under the radar because, you know, people are so busy talking about Palin and McCain, especially Palin, that they're not talking about that. They're not even, you know, nothing.
Yeah, and it certainly wasn't $1 billion for Katrina victims. It was $1 billion for the country of Georgia.
Right.
Well said. Van, thank you very much. And by the way, this headline is on one of the right-wing websites, one of the bigger right-wing websites. Palin's style causes a run on Kawasaki 704 eyeglass frames and upswept hairstyles. I'm telling you, the People magazine cover, I mean, this is why the Democrats need to dumb this thing down. And I don't mean dumb it down in a way like talking down to people or making it stupid. They need to package it. This is what you do with every brand you want to sell. Tide doesn't sell itself as the detergent that contains, you know, triethyl dioxy sorba soupy, whatever it is. You know, it sells itself. You know, you don't sell the features. You sell the benefits. It sells it as it makes your clothes whiter. It makes them smell nice. Give me things that evoke emotion, that create pictures. Give me some very simple, straightforward talking points. And change clearly isn't going to be enough now, because what's happened is that the Republicans have co-opted it. They have stolen that change phrase from Obama and turned it into Maverick, the original Mavericks, Maverick change, reform. And so change isn't going to quite make it. What are the Democrats going to do? And, McCain, Tom, in Minneapolis suggests to me in a note, he says in an email, he says, McCain is always saying, my friends. We should have bumper stickers that say, John McCain is not your friend. I think that's a good idea. Scott in Seattle. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hi. Nice talking to you. You're one of my heroes. I'm just concerned about the religious aspects of these things. I've been watching this since the get-go. You guys play the soundbite yourself of Rumsfeld saying the war in Iraq would last 6 days, 6 weeks. He doubted more than 6 months. I listen to all these evangelists talking about the second coming of Christ, but not one of them have been able to point out to me a mark of the beast. Well, there you go. I believe that the Iraq war is not God's will. In fact, it's quite the opposite. I think we could win that war, and it would still be an ill-gotten gain.
And here's the question, Scott. I'd say we already won the war because we took down their government and we occupied their country. That's the definition of winning a war. What we haven't done is won the occupation, because no country's ever won an occupation.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We could make it the 51st state and God would come back and say, what did you do there? I commanded
right.
you
I mean,
not
that's,
to do
basically,
that.
There's two ways occupations are resolved. Either a country takes control of the territory. We had, the occupation of the southwest of the United States. We said to Mexico, sorry, this is ours, and it's now called Arizona, New Mexico, and Southern California. You either win an occupation by taking the territory and making it yours, or you win an occupation by backing out and turning it back over to the folks that it was, to whom it belonged in the first place. And you can't win an occupation. And thank goodness there was a protester actually unfurled a banner when McCain was speaking that said you can't win an occupation. I'm really glad to see that meme out there. Scott, thanks a lot for the call. Tam in Camas, Washington. Hey, Tam.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hey, a couple of things. Sarah Palin scares me. Then there's two reasons. One of them is her own pit bull with lipstick analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Pit bulls go for the throat and they don't let go until yeah. you're dead.
Yeah.
And the other thing that scares me is, their lack of a health care plan that they're not talking about. Sarah Palin's a Pentecostal, so they believe in faith healing. So maybe that's their economic policy too. If they just cut Medicare and Medicaid, and anybody who dies, it was their lack of faith.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a stretch, Tam. I've been in an Assembly of God church. They're not opposed to medication. They do believe in faith healing and laying out of hands and things like that. But they also don't have a problem with you going to a doctor and getting antibiotics. It's not like it's the Jehovah's Witnesses. Your point is made, and I think it's more, what they want to do is they want to make sure that people like William McGuire can continue to get over $1 billion in compensation as being the CEO of the largest health insurance company in the United States, or the second largest health insurance company in the United States. They're there for the big CEOs. But your point, point well made. Thank you very much for the call. Jerry in Flint, Michigan. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Tom, I think you hit it right on the head when you said that, the problem with the Democrats is that they say the Republicans don't get it, but the Republicans know how to frame an issue and how to frame a debate, and they know how to attack using falsehoods. And for the last several years, it has amazed me how the Democrats have shied away from attacking Republicans using the truth. They don't
lie. Here's as close as it got, by the way. This was Barack Obama over the weekend responding to McCain's attacks.
He's the change agent. He says, I'm going to tell those lobbyists that their days of running Washington are over. Who's he going to tell? Is he going to tell his campaign chairman, who's one of the biggest corporate lobbyists in Washington? Is he going to tell his campaign manager, who was one of the biggest corporate lobbyists in Washington? Is he going to tell all the folks who are running his campaign, who are the biggest corporate lobbyists in Washington? Who is it that he's going to tell the change is coming?
Tom?
I mean, come on. They must think you're stupid.
Well, as a matter of fact, they do think that we're stupid, and apparently a lot of us are. And Barack Obama, great, you know, great one-liner, great speech, great clip. It should be turned into a spot, and it should be running
right.
every 30 seconds on every station in
right.
the country.
Right, Tom?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's when I say framing, I mean they're able to take a big issue, bring it down to soundbite or bumper sticker, and we laugh at that. But that's the way you get a message across. Now, one of the things that I think that they ought to push is McCain, and he has tried to make this maverick thing. I mean, that is it. He's a maverick. He's not a real Republican.
Right.
If he's not a real Republican, then why has he been in the party for 26 years? If he's not a real Republican, then how that equates, that 26 years equates to 90% backing. This is the way to knock down his maverick. He's
yeah.
been a Republican. If he's not a Republican, then why for 26 years has an R been in front of his name, and why is he on the Republican ballot now?
Yeah. Well, the easy answer from the Republican point of view is he's running to reform and clean up the Republican Party, and they realize how badly their brand has been destroyed, basically, by Bush.
Well,
and
that's just recently, but he's been on it for 26
years.
No, and
the point that needs to be made in the ads is that he voted with Bush nearly 100% of the time in the last year, near over 95% of the time in the last 2 years, and over 90% of the time in his, you know, throughout the Bush presidency. He was there for George Bush when George Bush needed him. He was hugging him, he was kissing him, he was voting for him. And with him. And that needs to be pointed out over and over and over again. You're absolutely right, Jerry. Kathy in Detroit. Kathy, got a minute before the break here.
Oh, yeah. I cannot believe the polls. I cannot believe the polls. We know that Bush has a 27% approval rating.
And that's why they're running against Bush. That's why they're running this whole campaign against George Bush.
Yeah, but we all know that McCain has been voting lockstep with Bush for the past 8 years.
We know that, but this is the ad the American people are hearing. This is the ad.
Mavericks. He fights pork barrel spending. She stopped the bridge to nowhere.
These are lies, but here they are saying
the original Mavericks.
And people are buying it. People are buying
it. I can't believe they're fooling that many American people. I really can't believe it. I want to know about Representative Rush Holt's bill.
Yeah.
You had him on your program a while back.
Oh, he's been on the program many times over the last 6 years.
We need paper ballots.
We do, and Rush Holt's not quite there yet. But we need to tell Holt and everybody else, you know, get the corporations out of our ballots. We shouldn't have ever privatized our votes, and we need to nationalize our votes. Kathy, well said. Thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman program at hartmanradio.com.
Sometimes I feel a little mad, but don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong, I seem to be mad. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Several alert listeners have pointed out to me that the Alaskan state airplane was not just a random useless plane. Apparently Randy Rhodes was all over this, and I missed that. I haven't seen the source of it, but several people have sent me notes and folks talking about it in the chat room and whatnot, that the plane was used to transport prisoners, that Alaska didn't have enough jails. They were transporting prisoners all over the country, and now it's being done commercially at arguably much greater expense. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us from Washington, D.C., I think. Ellen, where are you today?
Oh, I'm in Upper New York State still resting.
Okay.
But my staff is, half of them have returned to work, and half of them got the week before the convention over. and the other half is getting now. It's interesting. Actually, there's going to be a Palin book coming out in October, published by a religious publisher that's owned by HarperCollins.
Hmm. This is a pro biographical Palin.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be very pro.
Yeah, interesting.
And that is expected to hit in early October.
At the same time, there's this, when I was at the, when you and I were at the RNC, the book, in fact, there's a big, huge ad for it. I think the inside cover of even Talkers magazine this month, they're trying to get it out to the media as hard as they can, is The Audacity of Deceit, they're calling it, this anti-Obama book.
Right, yeah, no, I picked up, because they were floating around Radio Row, so I picked one up.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, just another Swift boat attack, but, you know, they're it's amazing how much money they have to put into these things to pay, you know, Borders and Barnes and Noble and whatnot for front of store placement. I mean, that's $5,000-$10,000 a month per, you know, to
easy.
Have it.
Easy. I mean, that kind of campaign is $100,000 or more.
Yeah, yeah, it's
as
amazing.
As you well know, you've written more books than almost anybody.
Yeah, no, I've seen the quotes, and I've had publishers actually pay for store placement on a couple of occasions, and it is very expensive.
Speaking of books,
yeah,
Mr. Woodward. As you know, his book has been serialized in the Washington Post.
Right.
Dana Perino was asked about whether Casey and Abizet had lost their confidence in the president, and she suggested that they ask Casey and Abizet. And then since there was another question came today at the briefing as to whether the decision to go forward with the surge was one that was taken despite the strong opposition of the Joint Chiefs and the top military leadership, and she said, she was asked, what do you think? Do you think this is an accurate patrol? She said, I do think that it is. I think the surge is no doubt one of the most important foreign policy and military decisions that have been made in a generation. So they're basically putting it that the president made this on his own. But as you know, there were lots of people in Congress saying you never went with enough troops, including General Shinseki in the beginning.
Right. Yeah, and according
presidential.
Well, and not only that, according to Woodward's book, Bush was by and large detached from most of this stuff, was he not?
Right. So I don't know how. I mean, I have not read the full book, but I don't know how this is happening in terms of in the old family therapy days, we used to call this reframing.
Yeah. Well, these guys don't, and I call it, you know, reinventing reality.
Right.
You know, reality is not, you know, who was it who said you guys live in the fact-based world or the reality-based world, and you're making fun of the press, you know, trying to actually get the facts when the Republicans live in a world where they create reality?
Right. So then somebody else follows up with this other question saying, what about the judgment of military policy in this country and what you're calling the most important foreign policy national security decision? And was there a unanimous opposition from the top military leaders? And she says, well, I would caution you that it was near unanimous. And I would like to point out that President Bush showed tremendous leadership to be able to ask, what are the other options? What else could we do? How can we win? Mm-hmm. That's how it is now being portrayed.
Yeah.
In addition to portrayal, of course, there was another portrayal today saying that the White House had been concerned and the White House saw the Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae thing coming for a while. And she said it's exactly the kind of event we warned about and tried to prevent over the years. Well, how did they try and prevent it?
This is the direct consequence of two things. Three things, really. One, the privatization or partial privatization of Freddie and Fannie, which you can lay at the feet, by the way, of Lyndon Johnson. He was trying to cover up the cost of the Vietnam War. Number two, the deregulation of Freddie and Fannie as a consequence and part of the privatization and you know, the securitization of this. But number three, and perhaps most significantly, is Greenspan deciding that because wages were not going up to match productivity, there had to be some way of stimulating demand among American consumers. And since they weren't getting the wages that they used to get, the wage increases that we got up until the 1980s, I mean, through the history of this country, instead he was going to make credit more available. And one of the ways that he was going to make credit more available was making it easier to borrow against the equity in your home. And, you know, the outcome of that is this disaster that we have.
Well, now she's saying that because they're going to rescue Freddie and Fannie, that it will be easier to get home mortgages. Well, let's hope it doesn't, again, move into that churning that we've seen.
Yeah, well, it actually over the short term will. I mean, you know, it'll stabilize things. But what they should have, it never should have been privatized in the first place. I mean, you know, the backstopping the home mortgage market is something that Franklin Roosevelt came up with in 1938 as a way of getting liquidity into banks that might not otherwise be able to take the risk. And it was a good thing, you know, and it allowed Americans to buy homes. And then, you know, these guys came along and said, hey, there's a government program. It's working well and it's handling trillions of dollars. Why don't we get a piece of that action? And so you've got, you know, Freddie and Fannie 2 years ago declared a $5 or $1.05 per share dividend. They're taking the profits, which should have gone back into the fund for times when the market is poor. They took that profit and they handed it out to their shareholders and to their CEOs. And so they internalized the profits and externalized the costs.
I can tell you from people who I know have gotten consulting contracts from Freddie and Fannie on their image before Congress.
Right.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah, I mean, it's run as a for-profit corporation, and it's wrong. It should be government function. This should be part of the commons. Ellen Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks for dropping by, Ellen.
Thank you.
Cliff Arnebeck, coming up next, chair of the Legal Affairs Committee of Common Cause, Ohio. Shenanigans coming.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So what's really going on here with the whole campaign in Washington, D.C., is it conceivable? Is it even likely that the election in 2004, you know, the election in 2002 was a coup d'etat, right? It was decided by the Supreme Court. The election in 2004, stolen. The election in 2008, fixing to be stolen. We're getting reports of 600,000 people getting ready to be caged in Ohio right now. So I wanted to get Cliff Arnebeck on, and there's a number of things that I wanted to, Cliff, welcome to the show, first of all.
Glad to be here with you, Tom.
RoveCybergate.com, the website. Cliff is the chair of legal affairs for the Committee of Common Cause Ohio and the national co-chair and attorney for the Alliance for a Democracy, also co-founded by Ronnie Duggar, great guy. And you also launched the Ohio Honest Elections campaign, but the website that people need to check out is RoveCybergate.com, which Don Siegelman on this program has suggested people check out a number of times as well. Cliff, before I get into your lawsuit, is Moss v. Bush your lawsuit?
Yes.
Okay. Before we get into that, there's just two quick things that I wanted to ask you about, and I didn't want them to get lost. The first is this thing over at Talking Points memo. I don't know if you saw this. James Carville hasn't changed. This is the headline. He was a spy for Bush in 2004. He says, I came across a troubling incident that Bob Woodward reports in his new book. Very troubling. On page 344, Woodward describes the doings at the White House in the early morning hours of Wednesday, the day after the 2004 election. The Bushies were worried that Kerry would dig in and fight. They needed the election wrapped up. But apparently Kerry had decided not to concede. There were 250,000 outstanding ballots in Ohio, so Kerry decides to fight. In fact, he considers going to Ohio to camp out with his voters until there's a recount. This is the last thing the White House needs, especially after Florida 2000. So what happened? James Carville gets on the phone with his wife, Mary Matlin, who's at the White House with Bush. Quote, Carville told her he had some inside news. The Kerry campaign was going to challenge the provisional ballots in Ohio, perhaps up to 250,000 of them. I don't agree with it. I'm quoting from Woodward's book here. I don't agree with it, Carville said. I'm just telling you that's what they're talking about. Matlin went to Cheney to report. You better tell the president, Cheney told her. Matlin does, advising Bush that, quote, somebody in authority needs to get in touch with J. Kenneth Blackwell, the Republican Secretary of State in Ohio, who would be in charge of any challenge to the provisional votes, end quote. SOS goes out to Blackwell. Corrupt Blackwell took care of it, and the rest is history. James Carville, mole on the inside?
Well, I'm not going to question James Carville's good faith. I think he probably... probably thought it was futile to challenge on that basis, and thought he was
the right thing for the party or something.
Sharing information. So I think he's a man of good faith, and I'm not going to blame him for this. This was a conspiracy by Rove, and the stealing of the election went way beyond the voter suppression and the, you know, putting people in a provisional voting status.
So give us the details here. How was the election stolen in 2004 in Ohio?
Well, the simple answer to that is that unquestionably it was stolen, as indicated by the exit polls that showed a dramatic win by Kerry, and basically that it was flipped to Bush. And how was it flipped? In 12 southwestern Ohio Republican counties, there were some 60,000 votes moved from cast for Kerry that were moved to Bush. And how do you know that? Because you look at the voting data, and it shows that in those 12 counties, Kerry reportedly was underperforming the rest of the Democratic ticket.
And in other words, people would go in and they'd vote for a Democrat for House of Representatives, they'd vote for a Democrat for the U.S. Senate, and then they decided to vote for the Republican for the president.
Exactly. And Kerry underperformed. It wasn't just one race. It wasn't just the state Supreme Court race that was competitive. It was the general ticket. And this is a clear indication that's where they were flipping the votes. Why would they pick that area? Because you've got the Democrats in those counties don't win elections. They're basically, stand-in.
So they just kind of shrugged and said, it happened again.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was a red flag, a clear red flag. And in addition, in these and other counties where this was going on, you had this peculiar reports of when it came to the recount, people switching out the hard drives. And the only reason you would do that is because there was something that could prove the fraud.
So you're suggesting this was electronic voter manipulation,
manipulation of the electronic tabulators. The other thing they did is Ken Blackwell contracted to have all of the vote count sent to Chattanooga, Tennessee, so the counties were reporting to Chattanooga, Tennessee, in a server location that was servicing the Bush campaign and all these Republican sites. And we have an expert now, one of the top global cybersecurity experts in the world, who said the only reason you do that is to create a time lag so that you could then you would know the numbers coming in and you could manipulate the additional numbers so that you could get the margin that you wanted in the election. And there were all kinds of other clear indications of fraud. A phony Homeland Security alert in Warren County. There were three counties where the bulk of this went on: Butler, Claremont, and Warren. They're all around. They surround Cincinnati and southwestern Ohio. They're again Republican counties. In Warren County, they declared a phony Homeland Security alert. And all of the ballots were coming in from the precincts, not to the County Board of Elections, but to a remote building where they were under the exclusive control of Republican operatives. And they were shuffling the deck. We have a thing called ballot rotation. So by moving selected ballots from one precinct to another, you could effectively switch votes from Kerry to Bush. In Claremont County, there were literally thousands of ballots that were being remade. In other words, the this is an optical scan county.
Right.
People cast the ballot one way, and they were remaking the ballots.
How do you remake a ballot?
You just take an unused ballot and say you're remaking it, so you cast the vote. The votes
so you,
a different
you just
way.
Fill in the circles everywhere the same except for the very top one.
Exactly. And then they also were placing, the director of the Board of Elections was placing stickers over the Kerry bubble and filling in Bush in Butler County.
Cliff, what you're describing is a fairly, large. I mean, this is not the operation of one rogue person. Santos Traficanti, I think, was famously said, there's only one way two people can keep a secret, and that's if one of them's dead. How come this hasn't come out before?
Well, the secret is out. I mean, the guy, Denny Bear, who was doing this in Claremont County, admitted it. And in Warren County, two people from the Board of Elections came forward in confidence. They didn't want to come forward publicly, but they came forward to the Bob Fitrakis at the Free Press and told them that this is what happened. And in Butler County, one of the Board of Elections staff said, you know, the morning of elections, this technician from ES&S came in and adjusted our tabulators. And this has never happened before.
This is Chuck Hagel's old company, ES&S.
And all of this stuff was reported, documented by various people. We were making referrals to the FBI. John Conyers was making formal referrals to the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly,
this is the FBI that was run by Alberto Gonzalez.
This may have been, I think that's that FBI, but that's not where they fixed it. They fixed it by Rove was priming this guy in Buffalo, New York, who was running the investigation of the Buffalo Six. It was one of these terrorism cases.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, where he gets real close to this guy, and he gets very sensitive to White House priorities because they're playing this in the State of the Union address and so on, they bring the guy into Washington to head the cybersecurity counterterrorism unit. And then just coincidentally, of course, in December of 2004, this guy named Stanley Borgia is moved to head the FBI's Cincinnati office, which had jurisdiction over the entire Southern District of Ohio.
Hmm.
So he's the guy that shut down the FBI investigation.
Wow.
So you've got evidence of crime, and you've got the top, one of the best, these are the people that put the crooks in jail, and they're going south.
Cliff, can you stick around for a minute? I'd like to continue the conversation with you.
Sure.
Because the question in my mind is we're looking at the possibility of, Karl Rove and some of these guys going to prison. It seems to me like they will do anything to prevent going to prison. And so anyhow, I want to continue the conversation. 16 minutes past the hour is Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'll tell you, one of the best lawyers in America, Cliff Arnebeck, on the line with us right now. RoveCyberGate.com. Check it out. Cliff, in the couple minutes here that we have left, two quick things I wanted to bring up. I'd like you to summarize this Moss v. Bush lawsuit, your lawsuit. And also I wanted to ask you about the article that I got by David Rosenfeld, the nearly 600,000 subject to possible caging in Ohio. You live in Ohio. What's going on in Ohio right now in preparation for the 2008 election?
Well, first of all, we have a former Democratic judge as our Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner, and she's an outstanding public servant, and she understands election law, and it's like night and day compared to what we have with Ken Blackwell. So that's the best thing we have going for us in terms of assuring the integrity of the 2008 election. Moss versus Bush was the contest of the election filed right after the election in 2004. That was voluntarily dismissed once the Congress certified the Ohio electors after the challenge by Stephanie Tubbs Jones and Barbara Boxer. We have a subsequent case called King Lincoln Bronzeville in which we're trying to raise some of these issues. We've announced that we're going to assert a RICO case against identifying Rove as the principal perpetrator of a ongoing Corrupt Practices Act conspiracy under Ohio's state, RICO law.
Right, the racketeering and organized crime law.
Yeah, Rove he's acting like the godfather. I mean, he is going around telling people that he has the power to decide who will be granted immunity by the Bush administration, who they'll prosecute, who they'll immunize. This guy is wild and out of control. He's an organized gangster.
Yeah.
And he's very much in motion, and unfortunately, McCain has, because he must think that the only way he can win. He's currently utilizing this guy and his gang of crooks. The other matter you mentioned, the $600,000 for caging, Secretary of State Brunner just issued a directive on Friday saying that the statute under which this was being done, with the idea of purging voters, was unconstitutional, and no one would be removed from the rolls because their mail had been returned as undeliverable without notice and a hearing. So she's addressing this aggressively and in the public interest.
Well, that's good news. The lawsuit that you're filing against Roe for being basically, you know, under the RICO statute. I thought RICO was something that was used in criminal prosecution and not civil.
It is a criminal statute, but there's also a private right of action. So what you do is offer it to the public authorities, and if they decline to take control of it, the private litigant can proceed and recover damages or whatever. And we've indicated that we believe there's a link between what the Chamber of Commerce has done in Ohio. Starting in 2000, they were buying the Ohio Supreme Court with $7 million of illegal corporate money. We've got findings to that effect, sanctioning them for doing this in 2000, 2002, and 2004. And it's connected to Roe's deal that basically after the New Hampshire primary where they got slammed, Roe said, gee, we've got to pull out the stops. We need these corporate groups to help us. And the deal is, if they help us get into power, there will be no more regulation. There'll be a very great loosening of any kind of tort liability for corporations. So it sort of create an atmosphere of license to prey upon the American public during the Bush administration. And then Bush gets elected by theft in the 2000 election. They basically, by having Roe in the White House, he's in a position to corrupt the administration of justice and the U.S. Department of Justice, in the position to undermine any kind of regulation. And we believe it's very clear that he influenced foreign policy in one of the biggest wag the dog strategies in history.
Are you talking about Georgia
Iraq? Both.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with Cliff Arnebeck, RoveCybergate.com, the website. Cliff, less than a minute here. What can we do to prevent the kind of election fraud that happened in Ohio in 2004 from happening in 2008 in Ohio or anywhere else? What can citizens do?
What citizens can do is be informed. And, you know, one of the things that was done by Roe, the foreign policy aspect of this is this whole emphasis on war on terror, and that the idea that you can't criticize Bush or these stolen elections because you're undermining our position in the war on terror. This is a cover story. This is a rationale for not criticizing fascism. And people need to be aware, they need to see through it, and they need to insist on accountability.
Yeah. And RoveCybergate.com, you lay out all of this. You're laying out the charges. I mean, this Velvet Revolution U.S. is what it's remapping to, against to prosecute Karl Rove.
Well, it's more to he'll be immunized by Bush. So the real target, the real game plan here is to pursue civil litigation for which he cannot be pardoned.
Right. Well, that's interesting. That's good. Cliff Arnebeck.
Great talking with you, Tom.
Say that again.
It was great talking with you. Great being with you.
Thank you. Great talking with you, Cliff. And say hi to Bob for me as well. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you here. AirAmerica.com for our live video stream. TomHartman.com for our live chat room. And message boards, 866-303-2270 to call into the call into the program. Stan in Gambrills, Maryland. Hey, Stan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Like a lot of other people, I've been a bit concerned about the nomination of Sarah Palin, but I'm really more concerned what it says. What would happen, what would be the situation if something happened to John McCain now, before the election, before the inauguration, or between the election and the inauguration?
Yeah, I think she has a pretty profound misunderstanding of anything going on in the United States. Just a few hours ago, she said that the reason why the government is bailing out Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae is because they became too expensive for the government. But these are not taxpayer-funded programs. She doesn't understand them.
But my point is, would Sarah Palin become the presidential nominee of the Republican Party if anything happened to John McCain right now?
And November 4th, God forbid.
And if that were the case, on the Daily Show the other night, even Newt Gingrich said it was too early for her now. In that case, would she become like? Would we become like the monarchies in China and Japan and Europe, in which we'd have regents directing, controlling the government?
Right.
One president who's been governed by a regent, Dick Cheney.
Right.
And that hasn't worked very well.
Well, good point, Stan. Thank you very much. We've had a couple of examples of this. You know, George W. Bush was relatively incompetent as a president. Dick Cheney was largely running the White House. At least the last 2 years of the Reagan presidency, Ronald Reagan was deep into Alzheimer's and George W. Bush was running the show. The last year of the Eisenhower presidency, Eisenhower had a massive heart attack and by and large the White House was being run by Richard Nixon. It's not like it hasn't happened before, but I think your analogy with, like, you know, the boy kings of France, you know, and of the United Kingdom where 12, 13, 14 year olds inherit the throne. And then you've got this coterie of paladins of assistants and associates and whatnot, and probably, you know, the Carly Fiorinas of the world, the corporate CEOs basically running the show. That's what would happen, in my opinion. Pat in Granite Falls, Washington. Hey, Pat.
Oh, hello, Tom. The reason I have to turn on my radio in the morning. Now, listen, we are in the battle of our lives. We all know it. We Democrats know that this is the battle of our lives. And what is happening? We have our hands tied behind us, at least one arm tied behind us if we don't have the media. What are we going to do? What can we do?
We need to just keep speaking out. Last night at this meeting, neighborhood meeting that I went to, where, you know, friends and neighbors that I've known for years, and a couple of them are talking about, you know, that McCain and that Palin, they're looking pretty good. And I just spoke out. I said, you know, I do this for a living, you know, so you can feel free to discount what I say. But here's my position. And I think I changed a couple of minds last night. And that's that, you know, and I didn't go there to be political. I believe that this is what we have to do as Americans. And it's not about being partisan, and it's not about my team versus their team or your team or anybody else's team. It's about what's best for the United States of America. And what we've seen over the last 100 years or so is that ever since the takeover, actually 120 years, arguably, since the takeover of the Republican Party in the 1880s by corporate interests, every time the Republicans come into power, the quality of lives of working people goes down. It's just that simple. And GDP, by the way, also goes down, or doesn't rise anywhere near as much as it does during Democratic presidencies. And that's, you know, these are the straightforward things we need to point out. We need to be saying, you know, what we're for and what they're against. And, you know, do you want your Social Security privatized? Do you want your school systems destroyed? Do you want more bridges to collapse like happened in the Twin Cities? You know, no, I don't think most people do. And yet that's the platform that McCain and Palin are running on. Excuse me, McCain and Palin are running on. And we just have to point it out. If we don't have the media with us, and we don't, and everybody talks about, oh, the liberal media out there, there's, you know, 1,000 radio shows, radio stations with conservative talk on it, and maybe 60, 70 of them with progressive talk on it, and even then, not in all cases all the day long. And we, you know, we need to just get the message out, as many of us as possible. It's amazing to me how many people are listening on the Internet and how, you know, word is getting around. But that's what we've got to do, Pat. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Rob in Mesa, Arizona. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I just wanted to make a comment. If Sarah wasn't putting herself first, she would have you know, basically just decline the VP nomination because she is not qualified. So if you're not qualified, you know, you should have just politely declined it. So I know she's putting herself first before country.
Well, but, here's another possibility, Rob. She believes that it was ordained by God that she should be in this position. And I think that there's a very high probability that she actually believes that she has been selected by God to be the leader of this country.
Okay.
Well, as we go into the end times. I mean, you know, she in her church, they preach that these are the end times, that Alaska is one of the two states in the Union, the refuge states where people will go. And that, the, you know, in fact, here, this is the pastor in her church. Just, you know, check this out.
We want to pray. And I want to please pray for Sarah. I know we, for Governor Sarah, I know we had an opportunity to pray over you. It was an honor to declare that word over you with the wisdom. But there were some things about the natural resources, about the state. There were some things that God wants to tap into to be a refuge for the lower 48. And I believe Alaska is one of the refuge states. Come on, you guys, in the last days. And hundreds and thousands of people are going to come to the state to seek refuge, and the church has to be ready to minister to them.
See, I think she's bought in. She believes this stuff.
Yeah, that's amazing. The other topic I have is basically on the insurance industry for healthcare again.
Yeah.
I make a plea out there to all the lawyers out there to find some case that can basically hold them accountable. It seems like every business can be sued for not having a handicap park or some sort of accessibility, and yet the insurance industry can dump you out onto the street because of pre-existing or whatever conditions.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem fair, and maybe it takes a lawsuit to make that change come about. I know they're talking about national health care, but I think Congress can make it happen now without either a national health care thing or just holding them accountable.
Well, I could if we get a couple more votes in the United States Senate. I mean, the big problem that we have is twofold. Number one, the Democrats don't control 60 votes, so they can't get anything past a filibuster. And number two, every time the Republicans whisper the word filibuster, Harry Reid faints. And so, you know, these two things need to be dealt with. But, Rob, your point is well taken. Susan in Los Angeles. Hey, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine.
You know, I am outraged at the corporate media's portrayal of Sarah Palin out to be June Cleaver or Susie Homemaker taking on Big Brother. And anyone who tries to speak out on her religious views, after reading the article in last Thursday's Wall Street Journal that described what her philosophy is, and the corporate media having people on the show who try to are trying to tell anybody as to what is going on with this woman and what her beliefs are either being talked over to during their conversation or being dismissed as spreading lies and rumors or being told that they're running out of time during the segment and that they'll have to talk about it some other time. And no one is really talking that this woman has a potential to nominate three Supreme Court justices that is going to determine the philosophy of what's going on in this country and nominating an attorney general that's going to have Bush and Cheney exonerated for what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that it is up to us to educate ourselves and learn all the facts and tell our neighbors, our family, our coworkers, anyone who will listen to us what this woman is really all about. Because God forbid anything happens to John McCain, and we are all going to be in bad times.
Well, and John McCain ain't that much better. I mean, the reports are coming out now that, you know, he's been running on, he's a big reformer because he took on Jack Abramoff. Turns out he took on Jack Abramoff because Jack Abramoff funded the smear campaign against him in South Carolina in 2000. And so when he had a chance to take down Abramoff, he did. It had nothing to do with, you know, his own party or whatever. It was payback. And, you know, this is a guy that holds grudges for long periods of time. But, Susan, your point is well taken. And let's not forget that not just her church, not just her pastor, but the Alaska Independent Party, her husband's a member of. She does the annual speeches welcoming them and saying, keep up the great work. And here's the founder, Joe Vogler, of the Alaska Independence Party, the group that wants to break away from the United States. They hate America. Talking about the Hate America First crowd, that's Sarah Palin's crowd. Here he is.
The fires they hail are frozen glaciers compared to my hatred for the American government. And I won't be buried under their damn flag. I'll be buried in Dawson. And when Alaska is an independent nation, they can bring my bones home, back to my country.
Back to my country, Alaska. Yeah. So, Leland, we got about a minute before the break. Leland, what's up?
Hello? Hello?
Hey, Leland, you're on the air.
Real fast, I want to answer one second on, I've got about three things, but real fast, this conservative pundit you have on, basically, is listen to what he said. He basically said, until actually Election Day, you can lie, cheat, and steal, and it's all okay. He was talking about Obama and the taxes.
Yeah, I took that.
Now, what I want to talk about, number one, we need to stop attacking George Bush. You need to do the following. Let's take the war hero and put it back 30 years ago. What's McCain done since? Supported George Bush.
Yeah, no, what's absolutely. Instead of supporting, good point, Leland. Instead of attacking George Bush, we need to make it clear that John McCain has been supporting George Bush. We don't need to attack George Bush. Everybody in America is horrified by George Bush. John McCain is the same. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman program at HartmanRadio.com.
Before the hour, Dr. Siegfried Ochmar is the chief scientist of the EEG Institute and board chair, Homecoming for Veterans, the website homecoming4veterans.org. And Dr. Ochmar, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here.
And I should, you know, I guess in the by way of revelation, reveal, you know, just or disclosure, I guess is the word. Say that you and I have known each other for a long time, for at least a decade, I think, been friends, and you, the work that you've done, you are just an absolute groundbreaking scientist with regard to EEG neurofeedback, and you've been doing some spectacular work with post-traumatic stress disorder and vets coming back. Tell us about it, Siegfried.
Yes, the good news is we now have a quick and certain remedy for post-traumatic stress disorder for most people impacted by it, and by the same technique we now have a quick and sure recovery path for minor traumatic brain injury, blast injury, concussion, whiplash, and this of course is now a huge issue for us with returning veterans. And so this puts it front and center. We've been working in this area for years, but now it's not just a minor issue where we can work in the backwaters here. This has got to be out there. It's got to it's got to help. It's got to be out there to help. There's no way that the VA can handle this problem.
Yeah, I first became interested in your work, you know, in the context of my work with attention deficit disorder, and you were working in that area as well back with back years ago, with EEG neurofeedback. This is where, for our listeners who may not know what EEG neurofeedback is, it's basically where you put electrodes on the skull, on the scalp, and measure the electrical activity in the brain. And then you have a feedback device of some sort. It can be a sound, it can be a video game, it can be, you know, whatever, that tells you what's going on inside your brain, and by regulating that activity in your brain, you learn basically how to exercise your brain. It's sort of like a gym machine for the brain instead of for the body. Is this a clumsy definition, Siegfried?
That's pretty good.
Totally non-invasive too. We're not adding anything into the brain. This is entirely being done by the person themselves.
Right. So we're dealing with the brain as software, basically getting the brain working again by training it back to a better, more functional state. And we did it with attention deficit disorder, as you know, and this is really the same kind of thing extended to other brain functions. For example, emotional control and influence on memory function, influence on our physiological regulation. So it's across the board. And it's really the same mechanism. It's just we're training different parts of the brain's conversation with itself and with the body, and that has relevance to traumatic brain injury. It has relevance to post-traumatic stress disorder. And we know these problems exist. Above the line, maybe 300,000 people have this identified problem, according to the RAND study. And only about 40,000 of these people have been identified by the VA. So there's a huge unmanaged problem out there.
Here we have
there's no way the VA can handle this. We now have a program, Homecoming for Veterans. Website is homecomingforveterans.org.
And it's digit 4, not spelled out. Homecoming digit 4 veterans.org.
Yeah, but also with the FOR. It works either way.
Do. Either way, great.
And people can go there for free services for returning veterans. As a matter of fact, we out here are taking veterans even back to the original Gulf War, Vietnam War, and World War II. We just recently saw, it's a couple of years ago now, a World War II veteran who came to us, age 79. He says, "I haven't slept well since World War II." And within just a few training sessions, he was sleeping like he never had before. I mean, like in childhood.
Yeah, and this is really remarkable stuff. I have worked with EEG neurofeedback myself. I've done it on myself. In fact, I taught myself how to fall asleep using EEG neurofeedback. When I started doing a morning show, and I had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I had to go to sleep in the middle of the afternoon. A skill I never had in my life. And we've used it with ADHD kids for years, and it's really quite remarkable the results that you can get from this. So homecomingforveterans.org, Dr. Siegfried Othmar is the chief scientist for the EEG Institute, and Siegfried, you've done and you are doing great work. I want to thank you for that.
Yeah. One thing I want to alert people to.
Sure.
There's also the problem of grief. The families that are dealing with these returning veterans injured, wounded, or killed, and that of course is another kind of PTSD. It really evolves in the same pattern, and often we don't look at the caregivers, but the caregivers sometimes suffer worse. So they should also avail themselves of this work.
Are you working with the VA on this?
The VA is starting to get interested. There are a few places around the country where they're already doing it, but of course they're working with limited resources. We're talking to other agencies in the Defense Department. We've got a program starting off here with the Salvation Army that's working on a daily basis with hundreds of homeless vets, and we're going to introduce this to the homeless veterans using the Salvation Army staff. We'll train them up, and they will deliver these services. And then we're also talking to Cam Pendleton about doing a pilot project and so forth.
That's great. That's great. You can learn all about it at homecomingforveterans.org. Dr. Siegfried Othmar. Siegfried, thanks so much for dropping by.
Yeah, good talking to you.
Good talking with you, too. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be mixing it up with David Horowitz. He says McCain has a winning strategy. I don't know, maybe I'll be agreeing with him. Patrick Michael will be here calling Obama's energy plan snake oil. I'll definitely be disagreeing with that. And we'll be talking with Joan Baker of TheocracyWatch.org. She's concerned about Sarah Palin's dominionist views. That and more right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.